Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. The time is 9:27 a.m., 14th of February, 2012. With me today is my co-chair, Senator Hoffman, Senator Ellis, Senator Olson, Senator Thomas, Senator Egan, Senator McGuire, myself, Stedman. Up today, we have a series of bills, 10 of them. We're going to change the order of the day. First up is going to be House Bill 276, Oil and Gas Production Tax, followed by House Concurrent Resolution 23, Alaska Arctic Policy Commission, House Bill 56, include arson and crimes of conspiracy, House Bill 146, land transfer from state and Alaska Railroad, House Bill 279, extending certain boards and commissions, House Bill 304, Alaska Fire Standards Council, House Bill 337, Board of Architects, Engineers, Surveyors, House Bill 365, Aquatic Invasive Species, House Bill 261, Commercial Fishing Entry Permit Loans, and then possibly House Bill 196, Bulk Fuel Loans, was scheduled pending referral but is not yet in the committee's possession. So the hearing will be postponed. First up, House Bill 276 by Representative Thompson regarding oil and gas production tax credit. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to adopt a committee substitute, take public testimony, and look to the will of the committee. Senator Hoffman, may I have a motion to adopt substitute version W?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Senate Finance Committee adopt Senate CS for CS for House Bill 276 /W as a working document.
I'll object for explanation and ask Mr. Peterson to come forward, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Darwin Peterson, staff to the Senate Finance Committee. Version W, House Bill 276, has just a few little changes. Section 1 of the bill, Section 1 is dealing with AS 4355011E, which is the 25% base tax for production tax. In order to calculate the base tax for a new lease or property, you would take the production tax value and subtract 30% of the gross value at the point of production for new fields and multiply by 25% to get the base tax. Let me back up a second, Mr. Chairman. The explanation that I'm going through in these sections describes how we're getting to a new 30% allowance on new production on new fields that are not in existing units in the state of Alaska. So Section 1, as I just described, is how you would calculate the base tax for a new lease or property. Section 2 is AS 4355011G. This is our progressivity calculation. You would calculate the production tax value as you normally would, and you use that to come up with the progressivity percentage. Then you take the production tax value and subtract the incentive allowance, which is 30% of the gross value at the point of production for new fields only. This gives you your adjusted production tax value that the producers would pay. Section 4 is AS 4355020A. This is the calculation of the producer's installment payments. It just simply says that once you figure out what your tax will be, you pay 1/12 of that amount monthly. Section 8 is AS 4355160A. This is the calculation of the production tax. Simply says that you have to adjust the production tax value based on the new allowance in AS 4355162. That statute reference is the new 30% allowance, which is in Section 10. This section sets up the new allowance for the first 10 years of sustained production after January, or for the first 10 years after January 1st, 2013, whichever is later. In order to qualify for this incentive, a development must be in a new lease or property that is north of 68 degrees north latitude and was not part of a unit or did not have commercial production prior to January 1, 2008. Those are the changes to the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I'll remove my objection to the adoption of the CS. Any further objection to the adoption of the CS? Seeing none, version W is in front of us. We have two fiscal notes in your packet, one fiscal note from the Department of Natural Resources for $211,400 in general funds for two full-time new positions. one from the Department of Revenue with an indeterminate change in revenue. An updated fiscal note from the Department of Revenue is forthcoming. And we have representation from Representative Thompson's office. Nobody here to present the bill? You can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and explain the bill with us other than the adopted section that was put in by the Finance Committee would be fine. We don't expect you to be able to dive into that area.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Steve Thompson. I'd like to start by providing a little background for this bill. The bill was originally conceived to provide a tax credits meaningful enough to attract exploration in the Nanuk Basin. We saw this as important because of the staggering energy costs for which Fairbanks is suffering. $660 million last year for space heating, average kilowatt hour of 23 cents. Heating oil is over $4 a gallon, and natural gas is at 23 MCF and only available to 1,100 customers due to shortages of supplies. Because of the high cost of energy, many people are burning wood, and Fairbanks has PM2.5 EPA standard problems. And it is driving a lot of residents to burn wood and other means that are adding to this problem. And the lack of adequate gas supplies have also created a stumbling block for economic development. Businesses can't expand, and really development has been curtailed. But 50 miles north of Fairbanks is the Nenana Basin, where there's an exciting potential for gas and possibly for oil. It's situated adjacent to roads, the rail, and power transmission systems. After working this bill in the House Resources Committee with DNR, DOR, DOL, and other communities interested in this concept, the bill was developed. It was expanded to include drilling in other unexplored, underexplored basins or areas, and expanded to additionally include seismic exploration. The original concept of the bill, however, was preserved, and that was to serve Alaskans, not only by providing incentives that would lead to commercialization of hydrocarbons for exports, but also to promote exploration for oil and gas resources in frontier basins that were where there's a possibility for local and regional use. Ever-present in the discussions in the building of this bill was how to balance the elements as public policy, the state's priority to inspire exploration and development, the level of risk that is reasonable for the state to carry, the total financial contribution the state would be willing to make, and the potential for a return on the state's investment. I can now walk you through the specifics of the bill. AS 4355-025P in the bill before you includes six geological areas for exploration. There is a map in your package. All of these areas were identified by DNR as having potential for discoveries of hydrocarbons, and all with some proximity to existing communities struggling with high energy costs. So the six areas are Kotzebue in the Selowik Basins, Nenana in the Yukon Flats, Ammonic, Glen Ellen in the Copper River Basin area, Agigik, which is the northern Alaska Peninsula, and Port Mueller, the southern Alaska Peninsula. With the addition of these five areas, the potential cost rose and risk rose to the state. To address this, 276 limits the number of exploration wells and seismic exploration as eligible for credits and limits the credits. Exploration well credits are limited, limits the number of wells to four wells in one of the areas identified in the map, with no more than two wells in any one area. The tax credit for drilling is for 80% of the total exploration expenditures for work performed, or for $25 million, whichever is less. The total credit exposure for this is $90 million. However, this is only $30 million above credits that would currently be available, could they all be used. And so it's really only 50% above the credits available. Seismic credits were created in the bill to attract new geophysical analysts. The credits are for four total projects, one in each of the areas identified, or any of the areas identified on the map. The credit amount is 75% of the total exploration expenditure, or $7.5 million, whichever is less. The seismic projects and the drilling projects are subject to this to pre-qualification criteria. These credits apply to work performed after June 1st, 2012, and like other production tax credits currently in the .025 statutes, expire in 2016. The credit is also not stackable with other credits provided under .025 or .023. It is the intent of this bill that the quick window for these credits will create a frontier basin stampede. To ensure the state's investment was warranted, the exploration projects were sound, and with DNR's input, pre-qualification criteria were created that must be satisfied before any project commences. DNR has broad discretion to weigh these factors within 60 days or as soon as practicable before approving or denying exploration well or seismic exploration credits under this bill. Also key in discussions on the bill was how to how the state gets a return on its investments. More geological data for state use and public release helps to expand our knowledge of the potential resources in these remote areas. It assists present and future explorers, and seismic data could very well attract new investment and development in the state, bringing the potential for increased production, tax revenues, and royalties. Added as qualification for the credits under HB 276 is a requirement that all exploration, drilling, and seismic data collected must be turned over to the state and made available for public release within 2 years of receiving the credit under the bill. The final consideration on this bill arose when we said, what happens if one of these explorers is successful? These are remote frontier basins. They face logistical obstacles. There's challenges in getting the hydrocarbons to market. Yet producers in these areas would pay the same production tax as companies on the North Slope that already have infrastructure and access to markets. Therefore, another component was added. For those explorers in the frontier basins who reach a commercial production, we gave them a break on production taxes. New producers in Middle Earth, commencing production after January 1, 2013, and prior to January 1, commencing commercial productions, excuse me, after January 1, 2013, and prior to January 1, 2022, are eligible for a rate of 4% on the gross value at the point of production, or taxes under 4355-011E, whichever is less, for 7 years following the start of commercial production. After 7 years, the tax rate reverts back to what is an existing statute. This tax rate is crafted only to apply south of 68 degrees latitude and not within the Cook Inlet. The bill gives no breaks on royalty, corporate income tax, or property taxes. What it does is give explorers willing to take the risk to explore these remote areas some predictability for the first 7 years of hydrocarbon commercialization. This will assist these companies in obtaining financing for infrastructure and other costs that are associated with these remote areas. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Do you have any questions on this section of the bill? Okay, thank you for your presentation. We'll ask a representative from PSC Energy to come forward, please. You're going to get off easy today because the camera's not here, so you won't have to explain who PFC is to the public, because pretty much everybody in the room has been around here for numerous hearings. So if you can introduce yourself for the record, and I think you want to show us a few slides and talk about incentive action to develop new oil, please.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Gerald Kepis. I'm a partner and head of upstream gas for PFC Energy. We're here to look at specific changes in the bill before you that impact E&P activities or exploration production activities. And I'm happy to walk through these slides and then entertain any questions that you might have.
Right.
Yes, sir. What we're proposing here is a, and the bill has already been read out, is a gross revenue allowance that would impact new oil development or new developments as stipulated. So the following slides are designed to show the committee the impact or difference with this gross revenue allowance versus the current treatment of new oil or new developments under ACES. And I'll walk through these one by one. And of course, please stop and ask me to clarify. The first slide in front of you, which is page one here, looks at a new development with approximate $17 per barrel capital costs, or CapEx, as you can see. This is a roughly a 70 million barrel field that would have a peak production of 10,000 barrels per day. So as you can see here in the slide before you, at $100 a barrel, the net present value of this particular investment would be $112 million, and it generates about a 16% return. I'll call your attention to when we apply the gross revenue allowance to this specific new development, and we go to the next slide on page two, you can see before you that with that 30% gross revenue allowance, the net present value is increased substantially, or doubled in this case. And you can see that the IRR or profitability measure has gone to 20%. So it's a substantial difference for these lower cost new developments. And again, that's the difference between adding this 30% gross revenue allowance as opposed to the current treatment in ACES. The next slide here, as we step up the cost scale, here we're looking at a capital cost of $25 a barrel, which is more aligned with the cost that we see with these new developments. Again, these are developments that are away from existing infrastructure, so are higher cost. And again, this is approximately a 70 million barrel field with a peak production level of about 10,000 barrels a day. So under ACES, this $25 per barrel new development generates a net present value that's about $24 million, so it's fairly modest, and an internal rate of return of about 11% under this particular calculation. So I call your attention to the next slide, where we've added the 30% gross revenue allowance that's being proposed in the bill in front of you. And you can see that the internal rate of return goes to 14%, and the net present value increases by about $100 million, so $121 million. So what you can see is the impact, again, of adding this gross revenue allowance on a new oil development at this higher cost, again, versus its treatment under the current ACES regime. I'll take a look at the next couple of slides with you. At a capital cost of $34 a barrel, which is among the higher or highest cost range that we're looking at, under ACES, this sort of investment is unattractive. You can see that's a very negative net present value, as well as a fairly low internal rate of return. By applying the 30% gross revenue allowance to this specific development, as you can see here on slide six, it has nudged net present value into the positive and increased the IRR to about 10%. So again, the slides and analysis here are designed to show the specific difference created by applying this 30% gross revenue allowance to a range of cost, range of low cost, medium cost, and higher cost new developments of oil outside and away from existing infrastructure and production. I'd be pleased to entertain any questions that the senators might have.
All right, and just for a brief explanation, this now concept, the 30% gross
revenue allowance was derived out of our previous work on trying to enhance new oil production, dealing with a gross progressivity calculation. And under the previous work that the committee did, if we couldn't go to a gross progressivity calculation in restructuring ACES to deal with the enhancements we needed in to develop new oil production outside of existing developments, we needed to do it within the ACES, current ACES structure. So this was designed to replicate the returns that the committee was looking at under the other piece of legislation that we'd spent many months working on the table, or a month or so working at the table here. So in the event that ACES is restructured, this would probably, in the future, this would probably be restructured also.
Mm-hmm.
Just for a background for the audience to understand where this came from and why the numbers are where they're at. Right. Any questions for Gerald? Seeing none, thank you. We'll now go to the public hearing. We have got one person signed up in the off-net to testify. If you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and speak to the bill, please keep your comments within a couple of minutes. Elizabeth Hensley.
Oh, hello, Mr. Chairman. This is Elizabeth Hensley with Nana Regional Corporation, and I just wanted to put myself on the record in support of the aspects of the bill that would incentivize exploration in the Kotzebue and Selowik basins. We really appreciate your hearing this bill. Thank you very much. That concludes my testimony.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. That's what I like, testimony that's so quick you can't even drink your coffee and to the point. Okay, we'll come back to the table. Nobody else has signed up in the room or in the off-net or at the LIOs for this bill. Any final questions by the committee members? Senator Hoffman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate Finance Committee pass Senate CS for House Bill 276 from committee to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
We have a motion to move the bill from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes and one forthcoming. Do we have objection? Seeing none, we'll move the committee to the next committee or referral. Next up, House Concurrent Resolution 23 by the House Finance Committee regarding the Alaska Arctic Policy Commission. This is the second hearing on this resolution. We first heard it for the first time April 12th. The intent today is to bring the bill back for the purpose of adopting a committee substitute. Look to the will of the committee. Senator Hoffman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate Finance Committee adopt Senate CS for House Concurrent Resolution 23/T as a working document.
Okay. And I'll object for explanation. Ask my trusty staff to come forward. And introduce yourself, please. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Darwin Peterson, staff to the Senate Finance Committee. I'll explain the changes in version T of House Concurrent Resolution 23. First change is located on page 2, lines 15 through 17. We reworded this whereas so that basically the last part of the sentence on lines 16 and 17 is new language, which reads that local communities, businesses, the state, natural resources upon which they rely will be affected by commercial activities and resource development in the Arctic. And the new language reads, and each has a significant stake in the nature and course of those activities and development. Page 3, line 3, previously there were 17 members of the commission, now there are 20 members of the commission. The new members are as follows. Page 3, line 21 and 22. Sorry, Mr. Chairman, this is not a new member. We just reworded this member. It used to say one member from a coastal community. Now it says one member from a coastal community with experience in a coastal management program. The new members are subsections K, L, and M. Subsection K is one member representing the marine transportation and logistics industry. Sub L is one member representing a native corporation. Sub M is one member representing a state licensed marine pilot. Page 4, lines 6 and 7. These are the alternate members. Previously, the commission had four public alternate members. This language has now been reworded, so there are two alternate members from the public and two alternate members from the legislature, one senator and one representative. Those are all the changes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. I'll go ahead and remove my objection to the adoption of the CS. Further objection to the adoption of the CS? Seeing none, version T is in front of us. And a second here, we have representation from Rep. Jewell's office. You could briefly explain to the committee what this bill is.
My name is Christine Hess. I'm Chief of Staff to Representative Reggie Jewell. As many of you know, the Northern Waters Task Force met over the last 2 years looking at the changing Arctic, and one of the number one recommendations of the task force was to see if we could establish an Arctic Policy Commission to get an Arctic policy for Alaska. All other nations have an Arctic policy, including the U.S., although the U.S.'s Arctic policy is moving forward rather slowly, and the commission decided that it would be good for the state of Alaska to have its own Alaskan Arctic policy.
Okay, we have one fiscal note from the Ledge Council for $272,600 in general funds for the cost of travel and one range 19 position to staff the commission. We have any questions from the committee? Will of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I move to send the Finance Committee pass Senate CS for CS for House Concurrent Resolution 23 to the next committee of referral with the accompanying fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
We have a motion to move the Senate CS for the CS for the House on the concurrent resolution. A long one. The individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Do we have objection? Seeing none, let's send it to the next committee referral.
Thank you.
Next up, House Bill 56 by Representative Gatto and Grunberg, including arson and crimes of conspiracy. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to have the sponsor introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside for further review. Rep. Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much for hearing the bill, members of the committee. It's a simple bill. It simply adds first-degree arson and second-degree arson to the crime of conspiracy. A conspiracy is an illegal criminal agreement to commit a crime and one act in furtherance of the crime. It is easier to prove than the completed crime, which requires that the crime be totally completed, or an attempt which requires a, quote, substantial step towards the completed crime. Arson in the first degree is the intentional burning or explosion of property, putting a human life in danger. Arson in the second degree is an intentional starting a fire or an explosion of a building. Arson is a very difficult crime to prove because often the evidence is totally destroyed. And a very small percentage of the actual arsons are proven. The bill is necessary because in a number of cases, arsons are conspiracies, often to destroy property for insurance purposes. And the person who's really responsible, the person who is the brains behind the operation, is nowhere near the scene, and the torch is long gone. By the way, solicitation is similar also, and that is a request to complete a crime. It doesn't require an agreement. So, in other words, if I go to you and say, I'd like you to torch the building, and you say, no, I've completed the crime of solicitation. A conspiracy, the punishment, is one degree beneath the completed crime. Arson in the first degree is a Class A felon. Conspiracy to commit, that's a Class B felon. Arson in the second degree is a Class B felony. Conspiracy to commit, that is a Class C felony. I have Annie Carpinetti from the Department of Law and Dan Jaeger, who's the Juno Fire Marshal here, to offer testimony if you wish and answer any questions. Delighted to answer any questions myself. Thanks again for inviting this bill before you.
We've got fiscal notes in your packet, 2-0 physical notes from the Department of Law and the Department of Public Safety, 1 indeterminate physical note from the Department of Corrections. We have nobody signed up in the room to testify, nobody called in on the LIO.
By the way, we also have some corrections officials here. I'm sure they can answer.
We've got a process here. If they want to testify, they need to sign up for the bill. And they'll bring that information forward to me. So if you want to sign up, better do it quick. Do we have questions for the bill sponsor? Seeing none, okay, we'll set this bill aside for further review. Next up. Okay. Let's back up. We're going to back up, I guess, on this bill. There was a sheet that wasn't delivered. Fortunately, there was a person that wanted to testify. Dan Jaeger, or did he run out the door? You did the right thing. You got your name on the list.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, morning. Members of the committee. My name is Dan Jaeger. I live here in Juneau. I'm the fire marshal for Capital City Fire and Rescue. I'm also a member of the Alaska Association of Fire and Arson Investigators and the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association, both groups that strongly support this bill. I've been actively investigating fires for the last 10 years. I have investigated fires here in Juneau, the Fairbanks North Pole areas, Valdez, and the State Fire Marshal's office in Anchorage. The arson crime itself is very difficult to investigate, and catching the suspect directly responsible for lighting the fire is even harder. There's less than a 2% conviction rate across the U.S. for arson crimes. The reason for speaking today is for support of House Bill 56. As you may have read in the recent Juneau Empire article, arson is a problem here in Juneau, but also around the state. In 2011, there were over 30 fires classified as arson or suspicious in nature here in Juneau alone. The property destroyed by these fires included vehicles, structures, open fields, and school parks. We had three cases in which suspects were identified and are in the legal system. One is an adult male who set fire to our aerial ladder truck with two of our firemen still inside of it. We have two juveniles, ages 7 and 12, who lit separate fires inside the local Fred Meyer and Walmart stores in December. And just yesterday, we have a teenager who confessed to setting fire to an outdoor recreation restroom several times over the past few months. It is my experience the arson cases are not usually planned or carried out by one individual. Often more than one person is involved in planning the crime and then executing it. It is for this reason that HB 56 is an important bill to fire investigators. As it is now, arsonists may only be charged with the crime of arson if completed or if it is attempted, which requires that a substantial step towards arson occurs. Without this, people cannot be charged with a separate crime of conspiracy if two or more people are involved in this act. The passing of this bill would provide stronger punishment whether or not the conspirators complete the arson. There are open and active cases here in Juneau that this bill could have been beneficial in helping close and hold those responsible accountable for their actions. This bill will also be significant for other communities across the state that deal with arson crimes.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. And that concludes our list. So we'll set that bill aside for further review. Next up, 146, House Bill by Representative Tammy Wilson regarding land transfers from the state and the Alaska Railroad. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to have the sponsor introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside. We have Representative Wilson in front of us. If you could please explain to the committee what this bill is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent District 11. House Bill 146 restores a revisionary property right to those affected by the repeal of Section 1209 of the Alaska Railroad Transfer Act. In 2003, by the urging of the Alaska Railroad Corporation, Congress repealed a couple sections of the Alaska Railroad Transfer Act in order to address some title issues of concerns. However, in the process, the revisionary rights of the property owners, the right that allowed them to receive ownership of their property once the right-of-way is no longer in use, was also repealed. The important thing to keep in mind is that this bill only restores a right that was taken away. It does not grant anyone special privileges beyond what was within ARTA. And this situation only applies to the homesteads along the Eielson Spur. It's also important to know that all affected parties, the railroad and constituents, agree on the bill as written. We have the constituent who championed this bill, Bonnie Wolstad, in the gallery, and I believe she has signed up, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much.
Do we have any questions for the bill sponsor? We have 2-0 fiscal notes in your packet, 1-0 fiscal note from the Department of Commerce, Community Economic Development, 1 indeterminate fiscal note from the Department of Labor. We'll go to the public hearing. We have nobody signed up in the LIOs, nobody's in the off-net, but we do have one lady that sat here for 2 days waiting for this bill. If she could come forward, Wendy Lindstrup. And I know those are hard benches.
Yes.
Could introduce yourself for the record, please. And
Bonnie Wolstad, representing my mother and my family. Thank you for hearing the bill. Basically, this just returns our right to get the property back if and when the railroad ever moves.
And could you give the committee, because you waited for so long, and I did talk to you yesterday that at the end of the session here, we go pretty fast, but you can have more time than that. I came all the way down from the Fairbanks area to testify, so we'll give you more than 5 seconds. Can you explain to the committee a little bit what your issue is?
The issue is when the railroad moves, we would like to have our property back.
Right. Well, let's back up a little bit. How did you lose your property? And we'd all like our property back, go back several generations probably.
Do you want the 5-minute version or the 1-minute version?
Probably the minute and a half version of that.
Okay. Basically, we own U.S. patented homestead, which pre-exists the railroad. When the railroad went to Eielson Air Force Base, the railroad crossed over the property. They had the right to do so under the March 12, 1914 Act. And we've never argued with the railroad their right to exist, their right to cross the property. However, in 2003, when they were trying to fix some problems with straightening the tracks out in the Anchorage area and land swaps there, they ran into the problem of potentially losing property that they were swapping for. So they went to Congress and asked for the repeal of the reversionary clause. That would help fix their problem there. The unintended consequences were doing so created the problem where we lost our mechanism and our right to be able to get our property back even and when they ever moved.
Okay. Do we have any questions from the committee? Well, thank you for coming in and letting us know and being patient at the end of session, even though yesterday I told her about the new lounge with a little softer seats to sit in than hardwood benches. So that concludes our public hearing portion of the bill. Do any of the committee members have any final questions for the bill sponsor? Okay, we'll set this bill aside for further review. Next up, House Bill 279 by the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee extending certain boards and commissions. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to adopt a committee substitute, have the sponsor introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside. Senator Hoffman, may I have a motion to adopt committee substitute version E?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move the Senate Finance Committee adopt Senate CS for House Bill 279/E as our working document.
And I'll object for explanation. And Mr. Peterson, can you explain the CS, please?
Mr. Chairman, Darwin Peterson, staff to the Senate Finance Committee. The committee substitute version E, it's two changes on page 2, section 5. We've inserted language that says that a person convicted of a felony involving moral turpitude may not serve on a board or commission of the state unless that conviction has been overturned on appeal or otherwise set aside. Section 9 of the bill, Mr. Chairman, says that that Section 5 only applies to appointments made on or after the effective date of this act. That's so as not to infringe on any current felons that are sitting on a state board or commission from their right to due process. Mr. Chairman, the The definition of a felony involving moral turpitude is referenced in Section 5 is AS 1580.010. Members in their packets have that statute in front of them if they want to read all of the felonies that involve moral turpitude, but briefly I'll mention some of them. They include crimes that are immoral or wrong in themselves, such as murder, manslaughter, assault, sexual abuse of a minor, kidnapping, distribution or possession of child pornography. Mr. Chairman, further, I'd also like to, for the committee's information, describe some of the state licensing requirements for some of the professions. There are certain professions in this state that you are ineligible for a license if you are convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude. For example, morticians, they deal with the deceased, but they are ineligible for a license if they've been convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude. Hearing aid dealers, also, pawnbrokers are prohibited from hiring someone who has been convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude. Pharmacists and real estate appraisers, those are just some examples, Mr. Chairman. It's beyond me why the state would allow someone of that, a felon that is convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude, from sitting on our state boards and commissions. Those are the changes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I'll go ahead and remove my objection to the adoption of the CS. Any further objection to the adoption of the CS? Seeing none, version E is in front of us. Rep. Hawker.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mike Hawker, District 32, Anchorage, currently serving as chairman of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee.
And you want to give us a brief synopsis of the bill, please?
Mr. Chairman, other than the sections that were just discussed, this bill is the annual board and commission reauthorization legislation. This legislation would extend the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers to June 30, 2019, the Board of Dental Examiners to June 30, 2019, the Big Game Commercial Services Board to June 30, 2016, the Board of Nursing to June 30, 2019, the Alcohol Beverage Control Board to June 30, 2015, and the Alaska Seismic Hazard Safety Commission to June 30, 2014. All of these boards and commissions have undergone the required law audit by the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee and have been found meritorious of continuing their existence as recommended in the legislation. Mr. Chairman, I would be remiss if I did not make a statement that I have absolutely, I have no opinion on the substance of the changes offered in the CS. In fact, that's certainly something very meritorious for us to consider. But the state has the legislature, have had a long precedent of not including policy calls in reauthorization bills, attempting to keep them clean. Last year, similar language resulted in the bill being vetoed by the governor, and I believe we've provided the committee, or certainly the chair, with the governor's veto letter, which I think raises a number of questions. I would ask that the committee consider that this legislation really should be vetted through our judiciary committees prior to be included in legislation at this time in the process. But other than that, Mr. Chairman, thank you very kindly.
Okay. We've got six fiscal notes, one from the Department of Public Safety for the Alcohol Beverage Control Board in the amount of $1,538,200, one from the Department of Natural Resources for the Alaska Seismic Hazard Safety Commission for $10,000, one from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development for the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers for $160,200, one from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development for the Big Game Commercial Service Board for $461,600, one from the Department of Commerce and Community Economic Development for the Board of Dental Examiners for $200,900, one from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development for the Board of Nursing for $1,070,800. All of these are in the currently funded in the FY13 operating budget. We've got nobody signed up in the off-net, nobody in the LIOs, and nobody signed up in the room. There's a few people for questions. So does any member have any questions before we set this bill aside? Seeing none, thank you, Rep. Hawker. We'll set this bill aside for further review. Next up, House Bill 304 by Representative Johnson regarding the Alaska Fire Standard Council. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to have sponsor and introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside for further review. We have representation from Representative Johnson's office.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Erin Shine, and I am staff representative Craig Johnson. House Bill 304 makes three simple changes to the membership of the Alaska Fire Standards Council. The first change designates an existing seat to a member of the Alaska Professional Firefighters Association. The second change adds a seat for a member of the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association. The third change is reclassifying the existing seat for the member of the Alaska State Firefighters Association. The governor will appoint one member of each of these associations to the Alaska Fire Standards Council from a list of at least three nominees submitted by each association. The intent of House Bill 304 is to ensure that all of these three associations will have representation on the Alaska Fire Standards Council and can speak with the full confidence of their associations in council meetings. With that, Mr. Chairman, I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Do we have any questions? Seeing none, there's nobody signed up in the off-net or in the LIOs to testify. Just a few people for questions, and we have no questions here today. Okay, well, thank you. We'll set this bill aside for further review. Just a second. That'll close the public hearing. We've got one fiscal note from the Department of Public Safety for $2,200 to increase travel costs. So we'll set this bill aside for further review. Next up, House Bill 337 by Representative Thompson regarding the Board of Architects, Engineers, and Surveyors. This is the first hearing on this bill. My intent today is to have the sponsor introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside for further review. Do we have anybody from Representative Thompson's office? She could introduce herself. She doesn't look anything like Representative Thompson. Who she represents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I am Lynette Burge, and I'm a staff member for Representative Thompson. I'd like to thank you for hearing HB 337 today. For brevity's sake, I'm going to call it the AELS board instead of the full title. House Bill 337 revises the statutes to designate a full-time investigator rather than part-time to serve the AELS board. This full-time position will ensure that the AELS board can meet the growing demands of oversight of the industries in the area of its responsibility. Currently, the AELS board shares one part-time investigator with five other boards. The investigator's oversight includes a total of approximately 20,000 licensees. Of these 20,000, 28% of them are AELS registrants. That's over 5,600 licensees for the AELS board alone. A new regulation recently took effect that adds 10 additional engineering professions that have not been previously regulated under the AELS board's oversight. Now the branches will go from 6 branches to 15 branches. Some of these new regulated professions include the structural, environmental, nuclear, and industrial engineer branches. The number of licensees the AELS board oversees will increase drastically. It is necessary for the safety of Alaskans to add these branches. However, the addition of these 9 branches will add to an already heavy workload for the part-time investigator. The lack of a full-time investigator for the board could reduce its effectiveness in carrying out charges required by the statutes and the regulations. An unintended consequence of overloading the investigator may result in a failure to fulfill to the fullest extent the state and regulatory charges. As a result, the state of Alaska may be put at risk and inadvertently create a hazard to public health, safety, and welfare. House Bill 337 will ensure that the AELS board can continue proper oversight of the licensees while remaining in compliance with all state regulations and all state statutes mandated by the legislature. As a result of hiring a full-time investigator, the AELS board will be able to maintain its reputation and integrity of the professions it oversees. At this time, I would like to address the fiscal note and point out that the AELS board intends to begin forward funding the full-time investigator position starting in December 2013, at which time the next scheduled fee increase will take place. Currently, the licensees pay $125 for biennial licensure. It is estimated that the pay increase will be minimal, approximately $20 or less per licensee per year. All testimony to date on this bill has been in favor of the pay increase. There was no testimony in opposition. That concludes my introduction of HB 337. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
There's one fiscal note from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development for $114,900 in receipt-supported services. And we have a question from Senator McGuire.
Thank you so much, through the chair. It's indicated in the talking points that the investigator currently assigned to this board has to divide his or her time with six other boards. What are those other boards? And I ask that question because I wonder if the five other remaining, should this bill pass, will want to come forward and have their own individual investigator as well.
Through the chair, Senator McGuire. The other boards are construction contractors, home inspectors, electrical administrator, mechanical administrator, and storage tank workers.
Okay, and just in follow-up, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In follow-up, is there, have you heard any testimony as to whether or not these boards are desiring their own individual investigator as well?
Through the chair, Senator McGuire, no, I have not heard any testimony to that effect.
Any other questions by committee members? We have nobody, I guess we do. We've got some people that want to testify. We'll go to the public hearing portion. Try to keep your comments to 2 minutes or less. Be specific on the bill in front of us, House Bill 337. Introduce yourself for the record, who you represent. Harley Highwater, Hightower, excuse me. Hightower.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Harley Hightower. I'm an Anchorage architect. I have practiced statewide since 1964. I'm presently chair of the AELS board and have served on the board for 7 years. House Bill 337 represents a priority issue for the board, and if passed, will allow the board to more effectively perform our charge of protection of health, safety, and welfare of the public. The AELS investigator presently serves five other boards, and at times his schedule dictates that he has to pick and choose among numerous cases on which ones to pursue. This is not only a health, safety, welfare issue, but exposes the state of Alaska and the board to liability. The cost of the increases created by this legislation will be minimum and will be covered by a slight increase in fees. Our fees are presently reasonable and fall in the low average range compared to the other 54 jurisdictions. The professions regulated by the AELS board support House Bill 337. And I would like to thank Senator Geisel, Representative Thompson, and the members of the legislature that are considering and supporting this House bill. And I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony today. Next up, Boyd Brownfield, please.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? Hello?
Yes, go ahead and introduce yourself, please, and start your testimony.
Yes, sir. I went off the air just for a second. Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Finance, my name is Boyd J. Brownfield. I represent myself. I've been a registered civil engineer in Alaska since August 1975, and I've most recently served on the AELS board for 8 years, from March 2004 to March 2012. During my tenure as a board member, I served as the chairman for 2 years and vice chair for 4 years, two each on each side of my chairmanship. I'm here in support of the AELS board having its own full-time investigator. AES is the third largest professional board of 20 boards. While AES is the third largest board, I would submit that it is the first in the category of complexity, having four separate and distinct professions that we serve: architects, engineers, land surveyors, and landscape architects. In addition, with the engineer profession alone, there are six separate distinct branches of engineering, each having its own separate technical challenges. These six branches will shortly increase the size to 15 distinct and separate engineering branches. This uniqueness of the complexity and the diversity places significant additional demands on our investigator who must have a clear working knowledge and understanding of all professions and branches within those professions if he or she is to do their job. I mentioned one investigator, as was noted earlier, that needs to be clarified. In reality, our investigator serves ALS only part-time. He has signed several different boards, and more correctly stated, AELS has the attention of 17% of one investigator. There is much that has been said on the subject, but in brevity, I have worked very closely with Mr. Savage since his arrival as our investigator. He has performed in a superb manner, reducing from 3 to 4 pages of unsolved cases to a list of about one or less page. It boils down to a cause and effect, I believe. The cause, of course, is a good system with good people serving, such as John Savage, however, not having the time to for full coverage of cases, thus they go wanting. The effect, unfortunately, is a system lacking full coverage of our responsibility, which profoundly affects the very reason you and I and everybody in state business works in that business, and that is to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of our great state of Alaska.
Mr. Brownfield?
We have the ability to fully perform.
Mr. Brownfield?
We need your help to enable us to bring our vital and full resources to bear on the cause, or the whole cause. It is an issue with no known opposition,
Mr. Brownfield?
A board that is self-sufficient, and a host of other pluses. The bottom line, of course,
Mr.
it
Brownfield?
Is the right thing to do, period.
That concludes our call-in. Makes it difficult, just for those watching, it makes it difficult in the off-net. There's a lag time, and it makes it difficult for the people on the other end of the phone sometimes to interrupt their presentation to take a breath. And but that concludes our public testimony portion. We have nobody signed up in the room to testify. I've mentioned we've got that one fiscal note for $114,900. Do we have any final questions for the bill or the committee before we set this bill aside? Seeing none, we'll set this bill aside for further review. Next up,
thank you.
Senate Bill 365 by the House Resources Committee regarding aquatic invasive species. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to have the sponsor introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside. For further review, Rep. Seaton, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Paul Seaton. I'm the representative from House District 35 and the co-chair of the House Resources Committee. House Bill 365 addresses an issue in which we have invasive species come into our state. And although we have some plans, they're not rapid response plans. And so what we do is we have situations where we get an invasive species coming in, and then study after study takes place instead of rapidly containing and eliminating that invasive species at the point of introduction when it can be done. Once it becomes established throughout a range, it is extremely difficult and extremely expensive. One good example of this was DVEX down in Whiting Harbor in Sitka a couple of years ago that came in on a mariculture project, the net pens, and we are still now just getting around to actually going in and doing that eradication. And if that could spread to the full area down there, you're looking at $130 million of fisheries plus the subsistence fisheries and all. It could be very highly impacted. So House Bill 365 gives ADF&G and other state agencies the authorities and the tools to rapidly respond to those outbreaks, both in freshwater and in saltwater. Normally what we've got in saltwater is an area where we can identify something quicker and respond on that localized general area. That can also occur in aquatic species, that's freshwater aquatic species, but if something is distributed broadly, then they wouldn't be using this rapid response plan. They would be using their normal kind of, okay, how are we going to do a long-term program? So House Bill 365 requires that coordination between the Department of Fish and Game to establish a plan, and it also directs the board and staff to prioritize eradication of an invasive species over the other management issues in that specific area if they can be done. And it also requires the Department of Natural Resources to include in the permits and leases a hold harmless provision so that if they have to respond on an emergency basis, the state agencies are held harmless, because that has been a cause of a significant delays in responses trying to balance those things. So I, Mr. Chairman, if I'd be happy to answer any questions.
We have five fiscal notes in your packet, 3-0 fiscal notes from the Department of Environmental Conservation and the Department of Health and Social Services, one fiscal note from the Department of Natural Resources for $84,200 in general funds for the costs associated with one temporary position to help develop a rapid response plan in FY13, one fiscal note from the Department of Fish and Game for $489,200 in general funds to facilitate the implementation of rapid response plans and public meetings. Do we have any initial questions for the bill sponsor? We have nobody signed up to testify, although we've got people signed up for questions, and we have none. So we'll go ahead and set this bill aside for further review. Thank you, Rep. Chairman. Last up, Representative Edgman. House Bill 261, regarding commercial fisheries entry loan permits. I see we have a presentation from his office. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to have the sponsor introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside. Rep. Edgman's trustee aide, can you introduce yourself and tell us what this is?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tim Clark. I'm staff to Representative Edgman. My understanding is this is the second hearing on this bill, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
House Bill 261 would increase the maximum loan amount for entry permit loans under Section B of the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund from $100,000 to $200,000. That's simply to reflect the reality of the cost of entry permits in many regions around the state today, where, for example, in 2011, the Prince William Sound Drift Gill net permit averaged $161,000. The loans would only be available to Alaska resident borrowers who are not eligible for financing through commercial banks or CFAB. And it's the sponsor's belief that increasing the maximum on these loans, by doing so, we lower the barrier for Alaskans to take ownership of Alaskan fisheries and eliminate the hindrance of the rising costs of
We've got 2-0 fiscal notes from the Department of Fish and Game and the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. We've previously had the public hearing. So, do we have any questions, concerns? Will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate.
We'll take a brief out of your seat.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate Finance Committee pass CS for House Bill 261 to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
We have a motion to move the bill from committee to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Do we have objection? Seeing none, we get rid of one. The next committee referral. That concludes this morning meeting. Next meeting, 1 p.m. for previously heard bills. We are adjourned.